Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 27, 2016. We'll begin today by reading on the front page a couple of articles that have to do with crime and courts. The first one was written by Huey Freeman, and the dateline is Monticello. Headline, Family Members of Nurse See Accused Killer Charged with Murder 26 Years Later. Monday morning, the parents and three sisters of Cheryl Ann Hauser filed into the courtroom and took seats in the front row of the gallery a few minutes before Gregory J. Hauser was ushered in by correctional officers wearing an orange jail jumpsuit, handcuffs, and a belly chain. They had been waiting for almost 26 years to see Hauser, now 56, facing charges in the death of 29-year-old nurse who was found dead in her garage with a rope around her neck. Prosecutors and police allege that Gregory Hauser staged the crime scene as a suicide. He was out on bond awaiting trial for sexual assault of Cheryl Hauser at the time of her death. He was later acquitted of that crime. Hauser, who is entering a plea of not guilty to four counts of first-degree murder, stood before the bench of Circuit Judge Timothy Stedman, along with his attorney, Brendan Bukowski. Hauser, who was arrested Thursday and is being held without bond in the Piatt County Jail, is accused of killing his estranged wife at her rural home located between Mansfield and Mahomet, October 4th or 5th, 1990. He was no longer living at their former shared residence at that time. Bukowski of Bloomington told the judge Monday that he filed a motion for bond to be set for Hauser in order for him to be released from jail. That issue is expected to be addressed when Hauser appears in court for his preliminary hearing scheduled for October 7th. The body of Cheryl Hauser was discovered by police on October 5th, 1990, after co-workers at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana, called her house when she failed to report for her 7 a.m. shift. Her 6-year-old son answered the phone, telling the caller that his mother, quote, was asleep in the garage with a rope around her neck, said a probable cause affidavit by Piatt County Sheriff's Sergeant J.D. Russell. When officers from the Sheriff's Office and Illinois State Police responded, they found her on the concrete floor, clothed only in a nightgown, suspended partially by a nylon rope. Quote, the yellow nylon rope was wrapped multiple times around her neck, the affidavit said. A used condom was found on the floor between the inside of the house and the garage. DNA evidence collected from the condom showed matches with the profiles of Gregory and Cheryl Hauser. Authorities have said that improved recent technology have made the conclusive DNA matches possible. Jurors at an inquest held shortly after her death ruled that the manner of death was undetermined. Due to the recent DNA development, as well as a 2011 finding by forensic pathologist Dr. Scott Denton that her cause of death was strangulation, authorities decided to hold another inquest. At the inquest, held in a Piatt County courtroom July 8th, jurors ruled the death as a homicide. Renee Fair, Cheryl's sister, said the family is grateful for the advances in technology that aided officials in making the arrest. We want to thank the Illinois State Police, Piatt County Sheriff's Office, and Piatt County State's Attorney for diligently pursuing justice for Cheryl, Fair said. She said it was comforting to know how many people care about their family with their kind words and support. Quote, I don't think any of my family members fully expected the tremendous impact Cheryl's death continues to have on us, Fair said. In the second article on the front page from Crime and Courts, we have this headline. Witnesses say Chatham shot 20-year-old Nate Johnson. Byline is Huey Freeman. As the trial of James L. Chatman was about to begin Monday morning for the fatal shooting of 20-year-old James Nate Johnson 3.5 years ago, Chatman waived his right to a jury trial. Chatman, 49, of Decatur, with an extensive criminal history, is facing 45 years to life in prison if convicted of first-degree murder by a firearm by Associate Macon County Judge James Coryell. The state presented 5 witnesses Monday who were at the scene of the shooting, including a man who was in the bedroom when Nate Johnson was fatally shot, and the woman who drove Chatman to and from the residence at 1114 North College Street. Chatman, who has been held in jail on $5 million bond since his arrest the day after the shooting, sat at the defense table dressed in a striped gray and charcoal-colored jail jumpsuit, along with his attorneys, Dan Hassinger and Ken Cloyd. In her opening statement, First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke said Nate Johnson had just turned 20 1 week earlier at the time of his death. Chatman believed that his 18-year-old son, Devontae Hill, had been robbed by Johnson, and he was going to pay the young man a visit. Quote, the motive was revenge, Kroenke said. She said the evidence would show that all the gunshots were fired into the bedroom. None were fired from the room in which Johnson was found unresponsive by police. Hassinger said that this was a case of self-defense. He said the victim was in possession of a gun, and the evidence would show that a witness heard one or two shots from inside the room. James S. Johnson, the father of the victim, testified that he last saw Nate on Saturday, the day before the shooting. Nate was not living at home at that time. Nate Johnson called his father asking for a ride home. He said he had just been in a class at the Salvation Army building. Quote, he showered and changed clothes, James Johnson said, adding that his son said he needed money to pay a fine and to try to buy a truck. Quote, I gave him money to try to keep him home. Kroenke asked him if the amount was $450. He said that was the amount he gave his son. Quote, that's the last time I saw my son alive, Johnson said. Decatur Police Detective Eric Ethel was a field training officer when he responded to a report of a shooting victim at 11:18 p.m. March 10th, 2013. He testified that when he arrived, he saw a man standing outside who directed him to an upstairs apartment. 2 other officers already were in the apartment. When he entered the northwest bedroom, he saw the victim lying on the floor. Ethel testified that 4 bullet holes were found in the bedroom door and 3 shell casings were on the hallway floor just outside the bedroom. The man who was in the bedroom with Nate Johnson at the time of the shooting testified that he was sleeping on the floor of the carpeted room in which there was no bed. The lights were off. His close friend was near the door. He had known Johnson for 2 or 3 years, called him by his nickname, White C. He heard someone hitting or kicking the door, which woke him up. The door was pushed open, then White C pushed the door closed, leaning on it with his arm and side. Quote, "I heard some shots, successive shots, more than one," the witness testified. Quote, "White C fell on me. I grabbed him. He said, 'I'm hit.' I said, 'Keep cool, keep calm.' Then he left the room, called a cousin, and then called 911. When Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz asked him why he left the residence, he said he was afraid that, quote, "someone would come and do something to me." He said he did not see Johnson with a gun. About 1 year later, that man, who is in his 30s, found himself in a jail cell on an unrelated charge. His cellmate was Chatman. He testified that Chatman pressured him to write an affidavit to contradict the statements he had made to police. But after he left the jail for the Illinois Department of Corrections, he wrote a statement which said that affidavit was false. Another witness, a male in his 50s, testified that he was sitting in the living room of the College Street apartment at the time Chatman knocked on the door and was admitted to the apartment by another man. He said he had known Chatman for about 30 years. He acknowledged that he did not want to testify, but was subpoenaed. He testified that he was at the apartment to smoke crack cocaine, which he had done a couple of hours before Chatman arrived. He was watching TV in the living room. He was aware that Nate Johnson and the other man were in the nearby bedroom. After Chatman briefly greeted him, he headed for the bedroom door. He saw Chatman pushing the door open, then it closed on him. Quote, "Immediately they started a tug of war at the door. They started pushing back and forth at the door," he testified. He saw Chatman pull out a gun. When he tried to fire it, it wouldn't fire. It clicked a few times. Then he, quote, "played with the automatic part of it." Then the gun went off. Quote, "He shot back into the bedroom. I saw that," the witness said. "I saw the fire coming from the gun." "There were two shots, maybe two or three," he said. After Chatman, quote, "ran back down the steps," the witness said he went into the room where White C was. A woman who had been in a nearby room was comforting the young man. Quote, "I seen her hold his head and talk to him, tell him he would be all right," he testified. "He was laying on the floor. His head was in her lap." He testified that he did not hear a second gun being fired and did not see Nate Johnson with a gun that night. Malia Kariotis, 48, testified that she drove Chatman and his brother Anthony to the College Street building and picked them up after hearing the gunshots. Kariotis, who was originally arrested on a charge of obstructing justice for lying to police, testified that she was in a relationship with Chatman for 24 years. When she drove the brothers to the scene, she did not know the purpose of the trip. She was parked nearby on Packard Street for about 5 minutes when she heard gunshots. When James and Anthony walked back to the car, she saw a police car turning onto College Street. Inside her vehicle, James Chapman was, quote, messing with the gun because the gun was jammed. She told him to point it at the floor. Why to the floor? Kroenke asked her. I didn't want a bullet in me, Cariota said. The trial will resume at 9 a.m. today in Macon County Circuit Court. On page 3, we find one more article related to crime in courts. The headline is Clinton Bank Robbery Suspect Identified. This was written by Kevin Barlow, and the dateline is Clinton. A Bloomington man in custody for an Iowa credit union robbery is suspected of the July 1st robbery of the DeWitt Savings Bank in Clinton. Clinton Police Chief Ben Lowers said Anthony Javon Brown, 32, is in McLean County Jail in connection with the August 18th robbery of the Accentra Credit Union in Bettendorf, Iowa. After interviewing Brown, officials identified him as a suspect in the Clinton bank robbery as well. Quote, we're happy to have this investigation behind us with the suspect identified and in custody so the prosecutors can move forward to the next phase, Lowers said. Quote, I appreciate the diligent work by our detective and the other assisting agencies that has brought us this resolution in the case. Brown has not been formally charged with the Clinton robbery, but a federal indictment is pending, Lauer said. The DeWitt County State's Attorney's Office has deferred prosecution to the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Central District of Illinois. Police think that about 3:50 p.m. on July 1st, Brown entered DeWitt Savings Bank at 302 West Main Street in Clinton and gave a handwritten note to a teller demanding money. The employee complied with the demand. No weapon was displayed and no one was injured. The suspect fled with an undisclosed amount of cash to a nearby parked car and drove west at a high speed through residential neighborhoods. Police think the same man also was spotted in Carlock prior to robbing the Clinton Bank. Officials say he is not a suspect in any criminal activity in Carlock. A criminal complaint was filed August 30th in federal court in Iowa, alleging that Brown robbed the Bettendorf Credit Union. Officials allege Brown entered the lobby and grabbed a deposit slip from the counter. He then demanded money from a teller and produced a paper bag. The teller filled the bag with $4,646 and fled in a gold brown Chevrolet Impala that was parked in an adjacent lot. According to court documents, Brown left the deposit slip on the counter, which was dusted for fingerprints, leading detectives to Brown. An arrest warrant was issued after surveillance footage positively identified Brown as the suspect, said police. Brown was arrested by Bloomington police on August 23rd. During a search of his residence, detectives identified clothes the suspect wore in the Bettendorf robbery and $31 in currency. Also, a 2003 Chevrolet Impala registered to Brown was found in the driveway. Court documents indicate Brown said he spent money on food, gas, marijuana, and a trip to St. Louis. The A3 Briefs column includes this item, Bar Worker Robbed. Police are hunting a man who held up an employee of a Decatur bar early Monday and made off with cash. Written reports say the male worker was cleaning up at 12:30 a.m. after Biggin's Bar and Billiards, 858 West Green Street, had closed. He was taking out trash when he was confronted by the robber, who threatened him with a handgun. The suspect took the employee back inside before grabbing the bar receipts and fleeing on foot. The robber is described as a 20-year-old black male, about 5 feet 6 inches tall, thin build, and wearing a blue Chicago Bears hooded sweatshirt, blue jeans, and white tennis shoes. Remaining on page 3, we find this article. Tree honors blooming relationship with Toko Rozawa, written by Allison Petty. The dateline is Decatur. A new Japanese cherry tree in Central Park represents the 50-year relationship between Decatur and Toko Rozawa. Next month, a 15-person delegation, including Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, will see a tree planted in a Toko Rozawa park to mark the same occasion. The gestures celebrate the long-standing relationship between the cities, which have exchanged many cultural lessons and student ambassadors over the decades. All of the students who visit Toko Rozawa and Decatur's German sister city, Civital, come home saying their lives have been changed, said Kathy Sorensen, treasurer of the committee. Quote, it opens their eyes. Most of these students certainly haven't been out of the United States, Sorensen said. Some of them haven't really been out of Illinois. And here we are, sending them to another culture. The committee's chairwoman, Jacqueline Osborne, knows firsthand how the experience shaped students. Her daughter, Angela, traveled to both cities, which laid the foundation for her career as an intelligence analyst. Quote, she's been to 66 countries since then, Osborne said. It helps shape their future, and it gives them something to reach for outside Decatur. They see that they can do this, too. Moore Wolf said the relationship has always been valuable for the friendships it creates and the understanding that people from different countries and cultures generally all want the same things out of life. Quote, I hope that as we progress in the future, that we're able to maybe even take this to a new level, one where we can even grow jobs and grow relationships, she said. Quote, in our global economy, I think there are some great opportunities for our community, as well as Toko Rozawa. The Kwanzan flowering cherry tree is 6 or 7 years old, said city forester Randy Callison. It will bloom a brilliant pink in the spring. It was planted in the southeast corner of the park and will have a plaque dedicating the tree to the relationship between Decatur and Toko Rozawa. The committee is recruiting area high school sophomores and juniors who might be interested in traveling to either Toko Rozawa or Civital next summer. For more information, a visit to the Decatur Sister Cities .com website is recommended. There's a photograph taken by Jim Bowling of this beautiful little tree, very graceful shape, at the dedication in Central Park. There's also a picture of Kathy Sorensen of the Decatur Sister Cities Committee, who is speaking at a podium in the park, and she's starting the tree dedication. And then finally, there's a picture of Mayor Julie Moore Wolf addressing the small group in seated on folding chairs attending the tree dedication. Let's see what kind of advice Mary Hunt is giving us today. It has to do with selling one's house for top dollar. So you're getting ready to sell your house. Just thinking about it can be an overwhelming experience. Should you hire a realtor, do a FSBO for sale by owner to keep from paying that big commission? Should you spend a lot of money to paint and put in new carpet, at least in the front rooms? Where do you start and what can you do to make sure you attract a qualified buyer as quickly as possible? Here are her advice items. Hire a professional, a realtor who is successfully moving properties in your neighborhood and comes with references will likely get you a better price for your home than you could get on your own. Most homeowners who sell their homes themselves end up losing more in the transaction than the commission they would have paid a professional. No radical changes. Should you remodel the kitchen, replace fixtures in the bathroom? Probably not unless they aren't working. Often, such updates done to achieve a higher sales price don't pay off. Almost anyone buying your home will want to make their own changes, so you are not likely to recoup your time and money investment. Unless your realtor recommends major changes like a new roof or exterior paint job, hold off and put your energy into other areas. Curb appeal is the impression your home makes when a potential buyer sees it for the first time. Repair cracks in the driveway and on the walkways. Keep the landscape neat and tidy. Flower beds should be blooming, weed-free, and well-cultivated. Make sure the home looks freshly painted. A good scrub down might do the trick. Keep the garage door closed. Make sure garbage cans, tools, and outside clutter are completely out of sight. You want the inside of your home to appear as large as possible. That means the clutter in all of the rooms has to go. And don't stuff it into the closets and cupboards. They need to be clutter-free and neatly organized, too. Motivated buyers look behind every door. Remove most or all of the items from your kitchen and bathroom counters. You want storage areas to look spacious, so take items out of the closets and clear shelves of knickknacks. Pack up your collectibles if they are visually overwhelming. Leave only a few tasteful decorator items on the mantel. Your goal is to create a simplified and calm atmosphere. Remove signs, pictures, or other wall hangings that could be construed as offensive. Remove all the papers, magnets, and coupons from the refrigerator. There should be nothing on the ground but floor coverings and furniture. Your home should be so clean that a Marine sergeant inspecting it could not find a single exception. Soap and water are cheap. Sanitize and scrub the bathrooms until they sparkle. No matter how old or worn your carpets are, have them professionally steam cleaned. If you have hard floors, clean wax or do whatever is necessary. Dust and polish all of your furniture and fixtures. Vacuum all upholstered furniture. If you have so much furniture that your rooms appear crowded, move some of it out. Rearrange things to give a more pleasing visual impression. It's said that you only get one chance to make a good impression. When talking about showing your home for sale, truer words have never been spoken. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the September 27th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.